8, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Oh, radio, radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast. Whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers in this hour of radio about radio. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
699. I'm Tom Rowe at the Wave Farm in New York, and this week on the Radio Art Hour, we're featuring three works from the American radio artist Gregory Whitehead, who's also a writer, sound poet, singer of tales, playwright, and media philosopher. He started making his first tape and radio experiments during the 1980s and has had radio plays, hybrid documentaries, acoustic adventures, and more on the BBC, Radio France, Deutschland Radio, Australia's ABC, National Public Radio, and other broadcasters. And he's won the Prix Italia for his Pressures of the Unspeakable, a Prix Futura BBC Award for Shake, Rattle, and Roll, which we'll hear today, and a Sony Gold Academy Award for the Loneliest Road play. So let's start with that work, Shake, Rattle, and Roll, a radio manifesto dating from 1993. Whitehead writes, quote, "I used every category of material at my disposal and every compositional and editing technique explored in shorter castaways. Digital audio tape was part of my studio by then, used in tension and interplay with my workhorse Atari reel-to-reels. To decay or not to decay, among my questions, made during a very intense period of 2 weeks for New American Radio, the hybrid assemblage explores themes of structural entropy in relation to free play, the living dancing with the dead, the bottomless cave mixed with the ephemeral utopia, songs collapsed into screams and scrambles, language elucidated and on the verge of disintegration," unquote. Here is Shake, Rattle, and Roll from Gregory Whitehead on the Radio Art Hour.
Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Shake, Rattle, and Roll by Gregory Whitehead. Thank you for listening.
Shake, rattle, roll. Shake, rattle, roll. Shake, rattle, roll.
the kind of strange and paradoxical fate of language out of the body, language once it continues to kind of move through. Pneumatic stress, the trembling hand, a bad time for noses, rough throat, squeal, 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 the intrinsic boredom of immortality, signs and wonders, the outsider, fingers tap dance with love ghosts in the darkness. It's a very poetic one. Dead letters live on air, but smell like sewage. And finally, whispered nonsense. Shake, rattle, roll. And this is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll.
I meant that the whole idea of live radio was an illusion, that the living only speak through the articulated corpses of technology. The dead mediate the living. And so, the more dead the transmission, the more alive the sensation. The more dead, the more alive. The more dead.
Bring back my body to me, to me. Bring back my body.
Shake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rattle. Roll. Shake.
This is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll.
Let me turn your radio down.
Sorry. Sound check. We did not rewind here.
We know that the voice has body. When we speak face to face, we see it connects to another body, the rest of the body, and that body has a name.
Shake.
Get wired, stick a needle in the brain, and spin those tunes, baby, because you're a tightly twisted roller derby brand of wild.
Roll.
You're on the air.
Shake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rattle. Roll.
A land where the unutterable is uttered.
Shake.
Slower.
Rattle. Roll.
And this is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll.
It is not just a place of sudden bursts of philosophical illumination, but it's also a place of the most depraved kinds of madness. And it is not just a place of sanctuary,
shake,
but it's also a place of danger. Not just dreams, revelation, and sanctuary, but nightmares, madness, and danger.
Shake.
The cape of the imagination.
Rattle. Roll. Shake. Rattle.
Have you been there? About your research.
Very, very kind of disquieting thing to hear over your headphones. Anyway, we almost crashed on takeoff from Honolulu with stabilizing flaps which were damaged by metal bars that had broken away from the landing gear. The plane barely lifted off the ground before it began to rattle violently. Now, in the wake of each fresh plane crash, I confess to being one of those morbid souls who read survivor accounts with intense curiosity. And I do keep voluminous files. Such accounts almost invariably refer to violent rattles moments before a disaster. So as the luggage compartment sprang open above our heads, these little miniature Samsonites coming down onto us, I felt certain that we were seconds away from rattling right into a burn unit. But the Qantas pilot immediately, when you hear a Qantas pilot, they tend to be very kind of deeply cool dudes. When you hear a kind of note of anxiety in a Qantas pilot voice, you really know you're in serious trouble. The Qantas pilot immediately informed us that he was lightening our load by dumping 2,000 liters of fuel into the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
Shake.
Get wired, stick a needle in the brain, and spin those tunes, baby, because you're a tightly twisted roller derby brand of wild.
Roll.
More dead and more alive.
You're on the air.
More dead.
Shake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rattle. Roll.
A land where the unutterable is uttered.
Shake.
This is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll. Pneumatic stress, the trembling hand, a bad time for noses, rough throat, squeal, 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 the intrinsic boredom of immortality, signs and wonders, the outsider, fingers tap dance with love ghosts in the darkness. It's a very poetic one. Dead letters live on air but smell like sewage. And finally, whispered nonsense. My body flies over the ocean. My body flies over the sea. My body flies over the ocean, so bring back my body to me. Several hours later, in a typically incongruous late 20th century change of scene, I sat watching the surfers ride the waves at Waikiki with a Qantas complimentary cocktail. I think it was a banana daiquiri, although I was so rattled that I have no idea what it was, but I was downing them as quickly as they could bring them. I thought about other waves, air waves, the risks of mechanical vibration. I thought about all the radio art transmissions that dump their fuel and make premature landings, about the countless audio aircraft that never arrive at their true destination or that shake, rattle, and roll violently without ever coming to the climax. And after three or four more complimentary cocktails, the voices in my head piled up like drowned rats, perhaps drowned after swallowing some of the fuel that we had dumped. Trying to get them on board here a little bit. Seven and a half, they're supposed to be doing it at 7.5 after recording it at 15. Right, so this is half speed.
Thank you.
the local daily newspaper alluded only to, and I quote, "a sinister dance of satanic voices, group necrophilia, and degenerate gobbledygook." And this is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll.
Shake.
Get wired, stick a needle in the brain, and spin those tunes, baby, because you're a tightly twisted roller derby brand of wild thing.
Roll.
The more dead the more alive.
You're on the air.
Sometimes when you try to talk about radio art in public, you get needled. You get needled by the living and haunted by the hanging vibrations of the dead. With the passage of time, I find that my most pressing problem is how to tell the difference. From stone-cold, hard-fact larynxes frozen in every stage of physical decomposition. From talk show golden throats cut with a scalpel, transected, then taped back together and beamed down across the airwaves. From voices that have been severed from the body for so long that no one can remember who they belong to or whether they belong to anybody at all. From pop monster giggle bodies guaranteed to shake your booty. From artificial tissue folds sneak-stitched into still-living throats through computer synthesis and digital processing. From mechanical chatterboxes dead to begin with. From cyberphonic antibodies taking flight and crashing to pieces. From down and dirty drive-time jingles to spotless digital recordings of Handel's Messiah. Sitcom patter becomes fused in the memory with the speeches of candidates and the numbing rhythms of traffic reports and weather forecasts. Needles are an inescapable fact of life for the schizophrenic and still amply animate the radio body, even if the world's fastest fake fingers, laser beams, have made it possible to get off without them. As the possibility of public discourse collapses, at least in the United States, into communal lip-sync extravaganzas, perhaps the most direct form of radio art, and certainly the cheapest, is to simply get wired, stick a needle in the brain, and spin those tunes, baby, because you're a tightly twisted roller derby brand of wild thing.
Shake.
Get wired, stick a needle in the brain, and spin those tunes, baby, because you're
rattle
a tightly twisted roller derby brand of wild thing.
Roll.
The more dead the more alive.
You're on the air.
Shake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rattle. Roll.
A land where the unuttered is uttered.
Shake. Rattle. Roll.
This is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll.
Now let's try to repeat the proposition without opening our mouths. Very, very good.
Some, of course, just heard other voices. One called in and said, they've been telling me I'm a schizophrenic, but after listening to you, I think I may only be a schizophrenic. But others describe various forms of uncontrollable voices that would erupt from their throats at the most embarrassing times. Several were acutely aware that their language had become infected by the electronic media, that their language was in fact no longer their own, and often found themselves talking like cartoon characters. Or they were talking like American presidents. Well, no, I have no memory of that.
Shake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rattle. Roll.
A land where the
unutterable
is uttered.
Okay. Is the glass of water still being passed?
Actually, a glass
around
of wine, since we're going to do a liturgy. Think wafer.
Yes. Well, they do get a bit sticky on the throat. We'd probably better have a glass of water or wine or two. Okay, and
can always tear off a piece of cardboard in a pinch.
Yes. Lighten our darkness, we beseech thee, O Lord, and by thy great mercy defend us from all perils and dangers of this night. We're, I think, beginning to move towards the liturgical mood.
dangers of this night.
Yes. Yes. Book of Common Prayer.
Yes.
Yes.
Are we ready?
I believe so.
On the air.
Shake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rattle. Roll. Shake.
This is what I mean by shake, rattle, and roll. Just, are there, I mean, Boris, I think you are a real basso profundo. I mean, somebody has to be down in my body lies over the ocean, my body lies over the sea, my body lies over the ocean. So bring back my body to me. Think hey. Of, you know, think of the Marines going off to Baghdad. My body lies over the ocean. My body lies over the sea. My body lies over the ocean. So bring back my body to me.
Shake, rattle, roll. Shake, rattle, roll.
How would you like to go through life hearing nothing more than that?
Won't you please bring back my body to me? It has gone a long way over land and on sea. If I promise to shake and to rattle, if I promise to shake and to rattle and roll, won't you bring my body to me?
You just heard Shake, Rattle, and Roll by Gregory Whitehead, broadcast by New American Radio.
Our second work from Gregory Whitehead on the Radio Art Hour today is Song for a Headless Apache, a bit of toy theater from Whitehead from 2004.
It is the summer of the year 2004 in America, and the president sits erect inside the Oval Office. He suffers from a terrible headache.
It hurts me bad. Real bad.
He stares at the daily intelligence briefing for the war on terrorism and tries to think. But a single sentence drones in his skull like a loud shout in a deep and empty canyon.
All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
A hungry worm chews his troubled memory like a chainsaw twisting in a rotten stump.
Mr. President!
It is a worm born way back in October 1886 on a prison train that transports a defeated band of Native Americans into exile and captivity. They are the last of the Chiricahua Apaches.
These are not Christian people. They are dangerous savages who beat their wives.
The ragged band of Chiricahuas travels under the leadership of a man known and feared throughout the Southwest as Geronimo.
Ra, ra, che, ra, ra, che, ra, ra, che, ra, ra, che, ra.
Within a few months, many of his tribesmen die of malaria and malnutrition. But Geronimo becomes a prime tourist attraction and performs in a Wild West show where he is billed as the worst Indian who ever lived.
Yippee, 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 yippee.
In 1905, at the age of 80, he rides at the head of Teddy Roosevelt's inaugural parade. And on February 17th, 1909, Geronimo dies on an army cot inside Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and is buried in the so-called Apache Cemetery. Fast forward to the year 1968. In Paris, students and workers perform an attractive blend of revolution and copulation in pursuit of a new social order. While over in a distant land named Vietnam, elite American troops hunt an elusive enemy named Victor Charlie.
L'imagination au pouvoir!
Meanwhile, in the New England city of New Haven, inside a dark building known as the Tomb, a member of the Yale University class of 1968 undergoes initiation into the secret order of the Skull and Bones.
Do you do do?
I do do do.
Is it new do do?
It is new do do.
Is it true do do?
It is true do do.
At the solemn climax of this ritual, the novitiate dances a waltz with the most prized artifact in the order's vast collection of human bones, a skull named Geronimo.
Cheetah, 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 doo doo da, dee da, dee da, doo doo da, dee da.
Not every new member gets to dance with the worst Indian who ever lived, but this particular student could claim a birthright, for his name was George W., and his grandfather, Prescott Bush, himself a prominent Yale bonesman, had stolen the skull in a nocturnal raid on Geronimo's grave, while he, Prescott, was stationed at Fort Sill in the year 1918.
Well, you see, it is a tradition, really, that every new bonesman will secure at least one celebrity skull.
Thus performing sacred bonesman duty, Prescott snatched the skull, together with a few other bones, doused them all with carbolic acid to remove desiccated bits of nerve tissue and cartilage, and returned with his booty to Yale
Aye.
So that generation after generation of Yaley Bunsmen might peek into the hollow sockets and snicker and chuckle and snort.
Hey, check this out, dude. It looks like some kind of skull. I mean, I think it's some kind of Indian skull.
Prescott Bush would later become a Big Bucks booster for a charismatic Austrian named Adolf Hitler and profit handsomely from investments in the Nazi war machine. Investments made in association with his father-in-law, George Herbert Walker, who admired Hitler's innovations in the transport and disposal of genetic undesirables.
These are not Christian people. They are dangerous savages who... Where are you?
Now we jump ahead to the year 2000. It's the early days of W's battle for the presidency, and due to certain potentially damaging leaks from Yale classmates, the W campaign decides that Geronimo's purloined bones have become a political liability, and the order is given to make the problem disappear. Incinerated as medical waste and flushed into Long Island Sound, or ground to a fine paste and ingested by veteran bonesmen as a remedy for their enlarged prostates.
Well, heck, it sure worked for me. I feel like a young buck riding on a Mustang. Yeehaw! Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Fast forward again to the summer of 2004. Wildfires smolder in the Hollywood Hills, while in countless foreign lands, elite American troops pursue the enemies of freedom.
These are not Christian people. They are dangerous.
In Washington, the president sits erect inside the Oval Office and attempts to focus on the daily intelligence report for the war on terrorism.
It hurts me bad. Real bad.
He has a nasty headache from a hungry worm that turns in his brain like a steel reamer in the root of a collapsed tooth. A worm that soon makes psychokinetic contact. The worm tells the president he must travel by train to Oklahoma, to a place called Cache Creek, outside a dreary military facility named Fort Sill. Over the strenuous objections of his closest advisors,
"Please don't go, Mr. President. Pretty please don't go. Pretty please don't go."
The president goes. Then the worm tells him that he must remove all his clothes and kneel naked in front of Geronimo's grave. And so, over the weeping and wailing of First Lady Laura W. and his daughter Jenna W., and to the great mirth and merriment of the International Press Corps, the president strips butt naked and falls to his knees, his pale bottom bidding farewell to the big red sun.
Farewell, big red. Farewell, big red sun. Farewell.
Watching television inside his secret bunker, Osama bin Laden thinks to himself, that would not be a respectable posture for a Muslim man. While in Paris, Jacques Chirac releases an official statement on behalf of the people of France. The worm then tells the president that he must sing a healing song dedicated to the headless spirit of the worst Indian who ever lived, with whom he, George W., had once danced cheek to cheek, and that this song must be composed from the sounds of the name Geronimo. Despite a last-minute plea from his vice president, Dick Cheney, the president begins to sing. As this picture beams around the globe, the whole world stops and stares at George W., naked, on his knees and in the dirt, singing a healing song straight into the grave of the worst Indian who ever lived. And in all the cities, and in all the markets, and in all the war zones, from Nepal to Jerusalem, the air becomes suddenly quiet and still, while the President of the United States of America sings and sings and sings.
Mommy Ray, Jerry Mooney,
Omino, Amino Ray. Jerry Mooney.
We just heard Song for a Headless Apache from American radio artist Gregory Whitehead. And first we heard Shake, Rattle, and Roll. Now we're going to hear The Bottom of the Mind, conversation between a host and a conjured revolutionary psychotherapist guest. Originally broadcast on the BBC as part of the late-night series Talk to Sleep, it was commissioned by John Dryden Goldhawk in 1999 and is an exploration of the ubiquitous radio interview format, yet with Whitehead playing host, guests, and all the band instruments. Here is The Bottom of the Mind from Gregory Whitehead.
The Bottom of the Mind. The title sounds ominous.
It comes from the wonderful sentence by the French poet Paul Valéry, "The bottom of the mind is paved with crossroads."
With crossroads.
Yes. And my program for self-renewal gains access to those crossroads through a therapeutic technique called walking the circle, a technique that I have personally experienced for more than 10,000 miles.
10,000 miles, that makes it more than a 12-step program.
I'll have to remember that.
When I first saw a mention of walking the circle in one of the early press releases, I thought it referred to ecotourism.
In a sense, that is not too far from the mark, though in my program, the wilderness is a wilderness more of subjectivity than of geography, and subjective wilderness is a lot more difficult to access than simply signing to exotic safaris.
You refer somewhere to the wildness within.
There's a wonderful quote from the American Thoreau that I print on the back of my business cards. Yeah. Go ahead, read.
"It is in vain to dream of a wildness distant from ourselves. There is none such. It is the bog in our brains and bowels, the primitive vigor of nature in us, that inspires that dream."
Very good.
So, walking the circle initiates a journey through the wild bog in our brains.
Yes, though my idea of the circle is highly polymorphous, in an almost metaphysical way. It's the circle of circles, the circle that circumscribes all other circles of life and being, circles of community, circles of communication, circles of meaning. And of course, each one of these circles has a distinct voice that must be uncovered and released into the air.
So what was the philosophical genesis for your perspective?
While I was a graduate student back in the 1980s, I proposed what at the time was considered quite an eccentric hypothesis, namely that the figure of the circle was not only a static symbol, but also a dynamic opening into latent languages that resided beneath the surface of the collective consciousness. If only we could hear the grooves.
And those grooves can only be heard person by person?
That is my hypothesis.
So how would I proceed with the basic technique?
Yes, well, the basic technique emerges from a series of experiments that I performed on myself beginning in the year 1995 and involves dissolving the self into a circle of time in a way that releases what I call the existential gramophone.
The existential gramophone?
Yes. It's accessing of the deep self, the deeply inscribed set of voice tracks that are fundamental to our identity and that must be liberated through a process we call the essential broadcast. It's the only way to know who or what is down there.
Down there, you mean down at the bottom?
Exactly. Down there where you really are, at those crossroads, down at the very bottom of the mind. And we need to give voice to the bottom, and we do so through this technique that we call puddling.
Puddling or paddling?
Puddling.
With a U or an A?
With a U. It's a form of broadcasting, really.
Well, some of the recordings that you've played for me, the voices sound inhuman. It's like they're coming from some distant cave. It's very unsettling.
Yes, well, those recordings are from my own gramophone. I do not feel comfortable playing other people's bottom voices in public. But in my case, I find them very compelling. Listening to them gives me a tremendous sense of well-being. It's as if simply releasing them into the air is a kind of liberation, and the grooves are songs of freedom.
But often the song is there, and then it disappears for long periods.
And those are the rhythms of identity. Baudelaire said that the dispersion and reconstitution of the self, tout est là. That's the whole story.
Professor, numerous traditions of psychoanalysis have proposed techniques for getting to the bottom of the self, but most of them involve language in some form, and yet for you, language appears to have nothing really to do with it.
No, not exactly. There is a language at the bottom, but it is not one that conforms very well to the psychiatric couch. Talking cures will indeed cure, but it cures the talk. And my technique is beneath the talk, not the articulate memories or the dreams or whatever, but the bogs and the bowels.
So it's not a talking cure, but a walking cure.
I really must write some of these down. That's very good.
Is there anything to be afraid of?
Certainly not in the beginning. But as the experiments proceed, let's just say it would be wise to remain alert to the unanticipated. It's a kind of dredging in a way, and when the net comes up, you can't be surprised if there is more in there than just a few wet fish.
So tell me exactly what I have to do.
The first step is to find a private place, one that is open and yet isolated. Next, you establish a circle on the floor of the space using chalk or a marker of some sort. Well, I actually prefer to use colored tape. And the circle should be exactly 5 feet in diameter. And then you place your tape recorder in the precise center of the circle, and you're ready to roll.
Then the journey to the bottom involves simply walking along the circle for extended periods.
It begins as a journey, but your ultimate goal is to paddle yourself into the other dimension.
The other dimension. I don't follow you.
Think of it as skipping down into the basement, perhaps. Usually when we say that someone is walking in circles, we mean that they are caught in a state of entropic suspension, expending energy, and yet never getting anywhere. But my approach is rooted in the many alternative traditions of circle dancing. These are dervishes who enter into the circle of repetition to achieve ecstasy through psychokinetic travel. The standard notion is that ecstasy is in some way an elevation going up, but I have discovered that the spin to the bottom is actually far more sublime.
So would it be better for me to dance the circles to get a really full dose of the sublime?
You're welcome to try, but I suspect you will quickly exhaust yourself. Walking will achieve the same end, and you will have more energy reserved for the important part.
The essential broadcast.
That's right. Giving voice to anything and everything that comes up through the circle, through your nervous system and larynx, and out into the world. You need to imagine that at the inner part of the circle is a record for the inner part of yourself, and that your feet are fricative needles releasing the information on the record through the application of sustained animal energy.
So, how long do I have to do this?
I recommend starting with an 8-hour session to establish the groove, then gradually work up to the full 24 hours, which is when you can really expect the inner record to release some of its more fundamental tunes.
24 hours.
It's a long way to the bottom.
And what happens to the essential broadcast once the gramophone has been activated and recorded?
That depends on the client. I have some who hear their broadcast once and never again. And then there are those who put the tapes on endless loop and can never seem to hear enough of them.
Do I detect the echo of Narcissus?
You might say that, or you might say simply that some people are more comfortable with their bottoms than others.
Is there any one broadcast that sticks out in your memory?
There are many broadcasts, but it would not be ethical to disclose them in this context.
Is there any neurological basis for this, that somehow walking the circle would trigger endorphins, which in turn produces the ecstasy?
Possibly, but I believe we have become too reliant on these simple chemical explanations. And remember that the mind is far more complicated than the brain. The brain is an organ lodged inside a fixed skull, but the mind has a locus that is always shifting. It's very fluid.
Mm-hmm. It occurs to me that the existential gramophone is a kind of time machine, not unlike Wilhelm Reich's Orgone box.
Yes, in a way, though Wilhelm Reich was never able to get out of that box, was he? Which made the box more of a storage device than a playback machine.
Forgive my skepticism, but the whole thing sounds like Edgar Allan Poe suddenly deciding to join the New Age.
It's quite all right. Everybody is skeptical until they master the technique. But I can tell you from my experience with hundreds of very well-grooved clients, once they feel those needles carving fresh tracks into their wild souls, the problem then becomes how to turn the gramophone off.
So there's a pleasure at the bottom.
It would seem so.
That was the Radio Art Hour, mostly put together from the work of Wave Farm Radio Art Fellows. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the radio art you heard featured on the Radio Art Hour.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.